Welcome back to Content Rookie. Today's episode is a bit different from the content I normally put out, which is more focused on content marketing and copywriting per se. Today, I want to talk about freelance writing and freelance editing together with a friend of mine, Kat, who's going to join me for this session. And this is a bit of a longer episode, and I'm recording it because a lot of you have been asking about how freelance writing works, how I got into it, freelance copywriting, and I think actually that's a really interesting topic. And Kat is a freelance writer with a bit of a different focus from me, so I think it would be really valuable to give her perspective in this session as well. So yeah, thank you so much for joining. I hope you enjoy this episode, and I hope you enjoy what we're going to be talking about in regards to freelance writing. Okay, so welcome to the podcast, Kat. Really nice that you could make it.
Thank you for inviting me.
Really happy to have you. So maybe you can give us a brief introduction about, well, who you are.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Kat. I'm a freelance writer and editor. I just started out my freelance journey February, March last year. So I'm a relative newbie in freelancing, but I have about 20 years experience as an editor, and writing has been something that's been in my life for a long time. I wrote a lot as a child and a teenager. I wrote awful, terrible stories when I was younger. And then I started blogging when I moved to Sweden 12 years ago. I just had a blog that I set up. Then I gave that one up, and then I started another blog, which I ended up writing on for just over 10 years, because I started it when I was pregnant with my first child. And then that blog has now turned into my website that I use for my business as well.
Cool.
Yeah.
So what first got you into the idea of starting at freelancing, or wanting to become a freelance writer rather than being employed?
It was ironic, really, because I made the decision at the time when I was happiest at work. I was really enjoying my job. I loved the challenges I had every day. I had been doing that job for 13 years. And I wanted to try and learn new skills and move into slightly different areas. I was working in a bank in the investment banking department, editing research reports. So I loved editing there, but it was editing sort of pretty dry topic, really. And I wanted to move more into writing for myself and also just try out new things. So I started looking for jobs in other areas, and I went to a recruitment company and had a sort of sit down with them and sort of went through my CV and how to conduct a proper job search. I thought I was doing a proper job search, applying for like one job a fortnight, and she was like, nope, that's not a proper job search. And she was actually the one who said, have you thought about freelancing? And then the idea just grew from there. And I'm pretty impulsive. So by the end of a week, I sort of made the decision that, I was going to try freelancing. And it was a sort of, well, I could just sit here and think about it for weeks and months and years, or I could just try it and see how it goes. So that was the decision I made.
Right. So had you already left your job when you started this whole search, or did you kind of start in parallel?
I started in parallel researching about freelancing. The kind of job I had, I wasn't allowed to do anything on the side. It was a pretty strict contract. So I had to just sit and research about freelancing. I couldn't actually try anything out. Mm. So that also made the decision quite... It was sort of an even bigger step, because if I was going to do it, then it would involve handing in my notice. But I had a 3-month notice period as well, so that bought me a lot of time.
Think this is really interesting to me, because my story is very different. I was kind of working as a content marketer in-house. And I mean, to be very honest, the main thing that triggered me to go freelance was that I felt like I wasn't being paid enough and I wanted to to make more money. But then I actually never really considered freelance writing or freelance content marketing, because I had this belief, and I think it came from the way I was raised. My dad is a professor in physics, and he's like all for engineering and sciences. And for him, anything writing related or anything even creative related, it was never really a job in our family. So I think I never even considered freelance writing like as an actual career. And only when I got so frustrated with my in-house position and basically just started pitching clients and realized, hey, there's like actually a need for this, is kind of where when it clicked for me. And I was like, well, maybe I can actually do this full time, and there's actually money to be made. And I think that's so interesting and quite different from a lot of the stories that I read online, where people really set out to become freelance writers or freelance copywriters. And it's like, it's a big goal for them from the beginning. And it seems like for both of us, it wasn't really on our radar until we were kind of exposed to it.
No, not at all. No, I mean, I actually had this belief as well that I could never freelance, because I believed that I needed to be around people all the time, and that I needed interaction with people constantly all day. It gradually became apparent over the years that actually I'm not an extrovert, I'm an extroverted introvert, and actually I love being around people, but I also really need to get away from people and have my own space. And the thing that I'd always thought, oh no, freelancing won't work for me because I'll have to sit at home and I won't get to talk to people. But actually I love it. I really love having my own space and time and being able to set my own agenda quite often. For how a day goes. And I think it's getting over that hurdle and understanding that I could actually work that way was a big step.
Yeah, no, I definitely can relate to that. People are always surprised to hear I'm super introverted. I can go weeks without seeing a person, and it's honestly fine for me. And I really love being in a state of flow. So getting up, sometimes I have an idea, and like having that time to actually write before I have to go commute to an office or sit in meetings, that I'm an early bird. So it's unfortunate for me that a lot of the meetings you have when you're employed in-house, they often happen pretty early in the morning. And that's usually the time where I can produce some of my best work. So that was a big change for me when I went freelance, or when I became a consultant, that I could try to avoid those early meetings. So I actually had that time to write and could maybe push meetings to later in the day, or even after lunch, because I always feel that for most meetings, you really don't have to be at your productive high. So that was a big change for me. And it's something I also still encourage now. I work in a lot of projects where I am actually working in-house, and sitting with the team, that I still try to avoid those really early meetings, or I actually even then try to come into the office earlier so I can get some of my writing done before that happens. And that has been like a big game changer for me in terms of productivity and also the quality of my work.
Yeah, I think I'm also an early bird, so I can see that totally. I think that time in the morning is so important. When I was working, I used to start work at 6 a.m. So I don't think I used to be an early bird. I think I ended up becoming one just because that's how my body clock now works, that I like to be up early. And, you know, that for me now as a freelancer, I mean, I have two boys and they go to school just after 8 a.m. And that first 20 minutes when I sit down at my desk in the morning, I love that time. I have a cup of coffee, I get out my bullet journal, I think about what I want to do for the day, I write down some notes. And I find that a really important time. It's the time when I'm most focused and can plan what I want to do and have thoughts and just jot things down. And I return to that during the day as well and go back and look at what I've written there and see how the day is going, or if I want to move on to something else. And I love having that time, that little quiet period in the morning where I can just focus.
Yeah.
So fully.
Yeah, it's amazing. But like, speaking about that, when you were a kid or when you were young, was kind of writing and editing always on your radar as something you wanted to do? Or what did you picture in your future?
Not editing at all. I had no idea that editing even existed as a thing. I used to write stories, especially when I was a teenager. I tried to write books. I tried to write novels. They were absolutely awful. I tried to write about things that I had no life experience of, so they were just terrible. But I just enjoyed getting something down on paper and having something to read back and look at and change and tweak. And I just really enjoyed that side of writing. But I had no thoughts of wanting to be a writer. I didn't really see that. Like you were saying about freelancing and sort of your family background, I didn't see writing as a job either. I had similar background with parents who do very practical things. My father is a research scientist and my mother is a bookkeeper, so they're really very focused practical jobs. So I never really considered writing as an option. And then when I was, I guess 16 or 17, I had to do 2 weeks work experience and I had no clue what I wanted to do. Right. And our next door neighbor was a magazine editor. So my mom said, well, why don't you just apply to them and see if they'll give you 2 weeks work experience. And so I went and worked on, I worked on Steel Times and Steel Times International for 2 weeks, fascinating magazines. And I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the whole business of it. And it was a small publishing company then. So they did things the very old-fashioned way. So you'd type up you'd write an article, you'd type it up on a typewriter, you'd send it to the typesetters, and they would send back the copy set into the columns, and then you would literally take a pair of scissors and cut it out and paste it onto a big sheet of paper that was done up with columns like the magazine.
Wow.
And then you'd put the picture and then you'd scale the picture on a photocopier. it was crazy. And then you'd cut that out and stick that on with glue, and it was called cow gum, and you could sort of put it, it wouldn't stick instantly, you would put it down on the paper and you could slide it around a bit. So you'd do the page layout like that. And I loved all of it. I loved every aspect of that. You know, sort of going and I went on a site visit, writing up the reports, getting it back from the typesetters, doing the page layout. I thought it was just thrilling. And then I just started to look into whether that this was an option as a job. And I found that I could take, I'd do a degree in publishing. There were about 5 places in the UK offering this degree. And one of them was in West London, and I come from the southeast of London. And so it seemed ideal. It was in London, but it wasn't far from home, and I could do this degree in publishing. And so I applied for that and got a place there. And that was so much fun as well, because there I learned that you could actually do it electronically on computer programs. You didn't have to use cow gum and slide bits of paper around on a page. And so from there, I went to a small publishing company on graduation, and I worked there as a sub editor for, I think, 2 or 3 years.
Right.
And so that's how I got into the editing side of it. And then in all that time, the writing sort of fell by the way, wayside. And then it wasn't until, it must have been 10 years later. And then I suddenly realized that people were writing blogs. Mm. And I just thought it was fascinating. And I loved the idea of it. So I just tried it out for myself. And that way the writing came back to me.
Yeah. I always feel like my entire career has kind of been me trying to avoid to actually become a writer and do what I really want to do, which is so sad when I think about it looking back. But I was, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately for me now, but I was the super nerdy kid that, like, as soon as I could read, I basically was in the library all the time. And I spent like my entire summer holidays reading. In the US, you have reading competitions at school and also writing competitions already in elementary school. And I was always there and wanted to win those and did win some. So I peaked early. But like, since it was never really on my radar as a possible career, due to how I was brought up, I always was like desperately looking for something else that felt as fun to me. And I think that kind of pulled in all the way into adulthood. I actually did end up starting to study engineering. And then quit after my pre-diploma and switched to business school because I was like, okay, well, this is at least still something. Like, I'm doing business and maybe it entails some writing. And then while I was there, I focused on marketing because I felt, okay, well, content marketing was popping up back then, like you said, blogs. So I was like, okay, this is maybe a way for me to get some writing in. And then it still like took several years, and I always was kind of freelancing on the side, but never even considered it. I never considered it a possibility to actually make this my career. It was kind of my side hustle and my income on the side. And I always still tried to kind of avoid doing what I actually really wanted to do. And I think I didn't even want to admit to myself that deep down, this is what I really enjoy. This is what I really want to do. Like, I both enjoy the strategic parts that come with content and writing, as well as the writing in itself. And I always felt like that wasn't good enough, which is so sad. Like, looking back now and like seeing the people I work with in my field and how amazing they are, and also how important my own work is, I think it's so sad that I spent such a big part of my life trying to avoid it and thinking it wasn't going to be good enough. I don't know. I just felt like a need to share that.
No, I mean, that resonates really strongly with me because I think, you know, by being an editor for 20 years, I've sort of skirted around the business of writing, and I've always been, you know, working on someone else's writing. And in a way, it's probably a similar thing, a way that then I haven't had to do my own writing and put that out there and get someone to judge that, because if I can edit someone else's writing and make that much better, then I can say, well, look, I can do that. I don't need to write myself because I can just make someone else's writing better. And then I don't need to actually have put work out and for people to say whether they think it's good or not. It's a way, sort of way of hiding behind that. But, you know, it's strange that my career in that sense has always been on the side of writing, but never really in it. And so this is still such an exciting step to say, okay, right, I'm going to try this.
Yeah.
To see.
So you mentioned, you talked a bit about it earlier, how you basically approached going into freelance. But was there like any specific research you did before you took the plunge, or was there anything you specifically tried to find out or you wanted to be sure of?
Oh, everything. I researched everything. I love to research. I absolutely. Sometimes I think that's a problem with why I don't get so much writing done, is that I sit and research things way, way too much. So I researched everything. I mean, how to set up a company in Sweden, VAT, taxes, how to do a balance sheet, everything, right down to how to pitch an editor, creative writing. I went on a course. I did an online course on writing for magazines. I looked into everything. I looked into whether I should niche down, whether I should go broad. I joined every Facebook group I could. I searched for everything on LinkedIn. I did courses on Skillshare. And also at first, this carried on also the first months of when I was freelancing, because I wasn't, you know, I didn't have a huge amount of work at first. So I also was researching how to send out letters of introduction, how to market myself. Yeah. So I feel like I still research those things as well. I still dip back in and check and, you know, see if anyone's got anything new to say on those topics, or whether I think I'm doing it right or not.
What would you say were like the most important takeaways for you while you were doing your research? What would you say are the things that people should really focus on?
Marketing yourself.
Getting
your name out there, contacting as many people as possible. And that's something it took me a really long time to learn. I was sort of terrified of approaching people on LinkedIn and going like, hi, I'm a writer. Do you have anything I could write about? You know, just literally. And I mean, I still, one of the first things I do every morning, I said that I have this little sort of time with my cup of coffee and my planning. And immediately after that, I go on LinkedIn and I look through, see if there's any opportunities. I have a certain set of searches that I do each morning. And then I go through and I just introduce myself to content marketing managers and just say hi and ask if they want to connect. And because I read I think it must have been a blog post by a freelance writer who does content writing. And she said it's basically just a numbers game, really. And, you know, and also, what's the harm in connecting with people and networking? Yeah. And, you know, then you might not get any work out of it, but you meet somebody and you get to chat with them and hear a little bit about the company that they work for or the work they're doing. And you know,
yeah.
You never know where that will lead in the future.
I can actually agree with that. For me, I think I got a bit lucky, or I don't really want to say I got lucky because I did put in the work, but I actually got my first clients because they reached out to me. I was putting out a lot of content just as a hobby. I started writing on Medium. Like sometimes I did these challenges where I tried to publish an article or like a short story every day. So I was putting out a lot of content just on my own. And that actually was how some clients then found me and started reaching out to me. And I consider myself very lucky, and I'm probably one of the few, but this is still how I get, I would say, 95% of my work. I don't reach out, but people read something, they really like the tonality of it. They really like my personal brand that I somehow built without even being aware of it. And that's what gets me business. So I definitely agree with you. It's the most important, the most valuable thing. And something I always say to writers or people who are considering going into copywriting or writing is that I think they should just start, and they should just start putting their work out there, because that's the best marketing. And as writers, we have the opportunity to actually market us with our own work, which is great, right? So
yeah. I think Medium is an incredible place. It's probably, you know, the last few months, it definitely has been one of the places where I read the most articles. Because I just think there's such an incredibly broad range of topics on there, and
I love some,
and I, you know, I get the weekly emails from them where they send what they think I would be interested in, and I think I read 95% of the emails that they send me, going to the 95% of the links that they send me, because there's some amazing writers on there.
Yeah, it's really great too. And especially like, since there is such a wide range, you can pretty much publish anything. Like I've published poems, I've published short stories, I've published articles and guides, like anything. You'll always find an audience for it. And I think that's also a really great way to reach out and to try some different things and see if you enjoy it. Because I have always written a lot just for myself and not really cared about the exposure it gets. But with Medium, it's nice to at least get some kind of feedback and some kind of validation. And it has actually helped me realize, hey, like, I'm actually not really good at writing this kind of stuff, or maybe I don't enjoy it, but this apparently people really like when I write it, and I also enjoy it. So I think it's a nice way to kind of test your boundaries a bit.
Oh, definitely, I agree. And I agree with what you say about sort of the validation on it as well, because I think it's not a social media platform.
No.
In the sense that you're not sort of, it's not like Instagram where, you know, you're sitting there waiting like how many likes that you want. So when you get a clap on Medium, it actually feels like something really important. It actually has meaning. Whereas, you know, a like on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram just has lost all its meaning. Whereas Medium still has that. So, you know, you get a clap on there and you just think, wow, okay, somebody actually does like what I've written.
Yeah.
So it has value.
I want to ask you, because we're both writers, but we are focused or niched in different fields. So you write more articles and are more for long form writing, while I'm more focused on copy and specifically UX copy, so micro copy. How would you say that's different? Do you think it's different in regards to the kind of clients we work with? Or because something that happens to me a lot is that people want or ask for a copywriter and they'll reach out to me, but actually they need somebody to just do research and write a bunch of articles for them, which I think is normally quite different from copywriting, and something I've started doing less and less of just because I enjoy the copywriting bits more. What do you think about that?
I think in one way they are completely different animals. Like you say, I think, you know, copy is, to me, is something that should be eye-catching, snappy,
yeah,
concise, and not that I mean that long form should be waffly and endless, but you know, there is more space in long form to say a lot of things, to think things through, to but in another way, I think, to me, writing is writing because it's all just storytelling. Copywriting is telling a story,
yeah,
in a very concise way, and long form is telling a story in a much longer form. And I think as long as you keep that in mind, that you're telling a story, then any form of writing is the same as any other form of writing. If
yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think something that I have noticed though is that I feel like people are willing to pay more for copywriting than they sometimes are for just writing per se. So writing articles or writing more long form content. Is this something you've also noticed?
Yeah, I think so. I think especially if you think with an article, how much time, I mean, we were talking about research, how much time actually goes into the research behind it.
Yeah.
I mean, the actual writing for me is maybe 20%.
Yeah.
And maybe 75% is research. And so in that sense, yeah, definitely. And I think it's important that people pay well for copywriting. On the other hand, because, you know, a good copywriter is worth their weight in gold. Bad copy is just the worst thing to read.
Yeah. I sometimes think that the differences between pay between writing and maybe more specific copywriting are that with copywriting, it is easier to actually measure if it's working. Like if you write a landing page or if you write a screen in an app, you make the UX copy for it, then you can usually measure if it's actually working better or not. While with an article, maybe that's not that easy because you can write the best articles, but if the client you're writing for doesn't ensure those articles are distributed properly, the amount of clicks and reads is not actually going to say anything about the quality of your writing. So, yeah.
Yeah, totally. I mean, something like UX copy, I mean, there are sales metrics associated with that. And, you know, a long form piece, it can be evergreen. It can, you know, and it can suddenly get picked up again by people if something changes that means that it comes back up again as a topic, for example. So it is very difficult to measure them against one another like that. And I think the way the human brain works, that we always want to, you know, everything has to be in reference to something else.
Yeah. But so you spoke a bit about your background editing and finance. So now as a freelance writer, did you choose the same niche or did you choose to go with a niche at all? What are you focused on?
I definitely didn't choose finance as a topic. Although, ironically, I'm now looking more into that as an area. I initially chose the travel, actually, and just in the sense that I love living here in Stockholm. I love living in Sweden most days, and so it's something that I wanted to write about. I wanted to write about life in Stockholm, about Stockholm, about traveling to Sweden, which as a niche ended up not being that great right now because it has completely dried up. So there's not much I can write about Stockholm apart from the fact that, you know, we're doing it differently in these coronavirus times. And I don't feel like people actually want to hear about that right now either.
And then of course travel is probably one of the most competitive niche you can choose.
And my thought was that I in terms of travel I could niche right down and you know have the advantage of being here in Sweden and seeing things through the eyes of somebody who has lived here for a long time, so understands quite a lot of the cultural cues but also still looks at things as a foreigner. So that was sort of the idea that I had in terms of my writing, but now I'm obviously having to to look into different areas. And ironically, I'm looking at things like personal finance now as areas to move into, which, I mean, that's not so much linked to what I was doing as an editor, really, because that was sort of stocks and shares and bonds and things like that. So it was a lot more technical. But I wrote an article this week about the Swedish pension system, and I just got really excited about it. of all the things to get excited about. But, you know, I just, you know, when you're writing something and you can't stop, and you just get so happy that you're writing about it, even if it's a very dry topic like that.
Yeah, it's the because best you just feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just, you know, I had to stop myself. I had to say, okay, right, these are the limits of the article. It shouldn't go more than, you shouldn't expand more on this topic. I can do that later, you know, but I was so excited. I just wanted to write everything that I could about it. So, and that then started me thinking maybe that's an area I can write about.
You should definitely share that article with me, because I still do not understand the Swedish pension system at all.
But the system is that it's one of those things that when you grow up in a country, you just inherently, you just know, you have this innate knowledge about how things work on a basic level. And, you know, when you come to a new country, it's something like that, and everyone around you knows, but they can't really explain it to you either. And they're just like, well, it just kind of works like this. And that doesn't really help me.
Yeah, I agree with that. I totally agree with that. But like, on the note of a niche, do you feel like that has really helped you niching down what industries you want to focus on? Or would you say it also works if you're a bit broader? Yeah,
I actually didn't want to niche down. I felt like I just kept on reading all the time that you should niche down, you should niche down. And I just wanted to write about things that I found interesting.
Yeah.
That was sort of, I was thinking, that's what I want to do. I'm going to be a writer who writes about stuff I like, things I find interesting. But I just kept on, you know, all the Facebook groups, all the courses, they just kept on saying, you know, you should find an area that you really love and write only about that and go very deep into it. And I was so resistant to that for so long. And I don't know, I mean, now that I have decided on travel and then that's been closed off, maybe I can go back to this idea of just writing about things I love. I mean, I think that's what, for me, that's what Medium would be for. It's there, I just write down what I'm interested in.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think
I've got a...
For me, it's a very interesting reflection, because I totally saw the same as you. Everybody's like, oh, if you want to be a freelance writer or a freelance copywriter, you need to focus on one specific niche and you need to become the best person there. And I actually never did that. And it was never an issue for me either, because I felt like why I wanted people to hire me as well was because they liked the way I work and I approach the work, and maybe they like the way my writing sounds, the tonality of it. And I didn't really want to be limited to, okay, they're going to bring me on because I know most about a certain topic. And to be honest, in my experience, and maybe this is really something that is out of the ordinary, but in my experience, when I've been brought on as a freelance writer, also writing long form content and not just copy, the client didn't expect me to know everything about the topic. So it feels also to me like this whole niche down towards a certain topic or towards a certain industry, it's not actually that essential. And I feel like a lot of my work really benefits from the fact that I work and write for a diverse clientele. So I write a lot in tech. I mean, that is somewhat my niche, tech companies in general. But then we know that depending on what the tech company is working with, the writing can be completely different and diverse still. But I really feel like that has helped my work, that I've written for so many different things and on so many different topics. So this is an advice I see online all the time. And I'm always questioning, is this really true though? Like, is this whole niching thing actually working, or is this just something people tell other people?
Yeah, I think, or maybe it is just so that then there's a spread of people across different topics so that not everybody chooses the same niche.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I think, like you're saying about UX writing as well, I mean, for me, I would imagine that there it's an advantage that you know something about the subject, but that you also don't know everything, because then you can still stay from the reader's perspective much more, if you understand what I mean. Then you are also coming with it from the user's perspective. Yeah. That you know,
for
you're
UX
wanting
writing,
to know about.
Exactly. It's always really important that you just pretend like you're really stupid and don't know anything. and then the UX writing needs to be so clear that even a person that doesn't know anything or is completely new still understands what we want them to understand. It can actually be valuable to not know too much about the subject or the topic before you start writing there. But I still feel like that also for a lot of other types of writing. I don't know. I also feel like it sparks creativity much more. And like in copywriting, a lot of the work I've been asked to do is like just, you know, write a highly converting landing page or write some ad copy. And that usually means I need to come up with something that not 15 of your competitors are already doing. And there it would help me to write and also consume other types of content and not be super niched down. But maybe this is also a personality thing, I guess. I think it may be easier for certain personalities to be really focused on a certain area and feel like they're consuming everything there and really being updated there. Well, for me, I don't really enjoy that. I like to go really deep, but I also really like to learn and consume everything new in a topic or in a field. And that is really what keeps me going and gives me energy.
Yeah, I think so. As I said, I research so much, and I don't just research on subjects that I'm working on. If I just see something, then I need to read up about it. That's just how I am. And I love to know like a certain amount of information about hundreds of different topics.
Yeah.
You know, I don't feel like I need to go really, really deep into something. Yeah. I mean, for example, I mean, just the other day, I don't know why, but I suddenly decided that I wanted to listen to the music from the film of the musical Chicago. Mm. And so I started listening to that. And then I started thinking, oh, I wonder what the background of this is, like how the music, you know, how they came up with the musical. So then I started looking into that. And then I was like, oh, I found out that it was based on a play that had been based on some newspaper articles about true stories. So then I ended up in this little sort of rabbit hole of looking up about the two women who it was based on. And I just, you know, started thinking, oh, maybe I can write about that and just put that somewhere on Vocal or Medium or somewhere like that. And I think that's what I like to do, is just, you know, get something captures my imagination, and then I want to write about it because I think it's interesting. I think other people might think it's interesting, you know, and but that doesn't mean to say that I suddenly want to start writing about 1920s film crime in Chicago and niche right down on that, because tomorrow I'll find something else that I find really interesting on a completely different topic.
Like
Swedish pensions.
Yeah, but I recognize that for myself as well. Like I'll get into something and then I consume anything I can possibly find about it. And
yeah.
I really love that. But would you say, because you said one of the main reasons that you went into freelance writing was that you wanted to produce more of your own work and you wanted to write about things that you really care about. But I guess my question is, do you feel like you actually have time to do that? Because for me personally, ever since I started writing full time, I feel like I have so little time to actually write the things that I personally just care about and that are not for money in a sense. So how do you manage that?
Very badly as well. I feel like exactly the same, because, you know, the editing work is what pays me. I do editing, I do a little bit of translation, and that's, you know, that's where the money is. And then that's also the work that's time sensitive. That's the work that, you know, it comes in, I need to prioritize that. And then also because I do focus too much on, way too much on research. So the writing ends up being such a tiny part of the day. And I also find that I can start writing an article and I'm really excited about it. And then something will happen. I'll get a piece of editing work in, or I'll end up doing a lot of research. And then somehow along the way, I lose the thread with the article. Mm-hmm. And I just have to sort of put it aside. I mean, I have notes everywhere of things that have popped into my brain. And then I'll look at them 2 hours later and I'll think, I don't really think this has legs, or I'm not really sure what I meant when I wrote this bizarre note to myself. Because they tend to be vague. They're just the sort of one or two words that I just write down on a post-it note and slap down on my desk and think, I'll come back to that later when I've finished this. And I think sometimes I should maybe set aside maybe an hour a day and say, okay, this is my sacred hour just for writing, and I will sit and I will just write whatever I want in this hour, and I will not let anything else distract me.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I can easily take an hour out and just say, I'm not editing in this hour, or I'm not doing translation in this hour. And I think that would be a really good thing for me to really focus myself and say, yeah, I must write for an hour every day. Yeah. And it doesn't matter if I don't put it out there. I've written it and I've written something, and you know, I'm keeping that.
Yeah.
See, writing muscle.
I've actually tried doing that. And what happened for me was that I suddenly felt really stressed about it. About wanting to produce something really valuable for myself in that hour. So I actually ended up not enjoying it. But it was, I mean, I did actually take the time, which was nice. So, yeah.
Yeah. I tried with, I'd seen something where, you know, you should write a certain number of words a day. So I built myself a spreadsheet and I had all this thing and I was going to do little charts to see how my progress was. And I got so stressed about word count every day. And I'd be writing for 15 minutes and I'd be, oh, I must check how many words I've written. And then I have to go into the spreadsheet and put that in. And then I'd go back and write for another 15 minutes and think, oh, I haven't counted my words. So I had to give up on that because it ended up just being stressful. The same thing. It was so stressful. And then I was like, well, yesterday the bar on the bar chart looked really good. So today I need to beat that. And then if I wasn't writing enough words, then I think, well, I might as well just give up because it's not going to be as good a day and I'll come back to it tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think sometimes spreadsheets and motivation can be great like that, but other times they just really work against you.
Yeah. And then on that note, do you ever face writer's block, both when you work for clients or when you're trying to write for yourself?
Yes. All the time. And then I will probably get a third through and I go, this is terrible. This is awful. I don't know what to say. Or this is suddenly going in a different direction and I don't think it's right.
How do you get past it? What do you do? Do you have any tricks? And I know, this is such a cliche question. Nobody has tricks. Obviously, we all get it, and then it eventually goes away.
I try and give myself a good talking to, and I try and just say, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter. Take a break, have a glass of water, have a cup of coffee, go away from it, think about something else, which kind of contradicts what I said before about carving out an hour for myself to write something, anything, but I think taking down some of the pressure and just saying, okay, it doesn't matter if this isn't working right now. Just write something and I can always come back and edit it and relook at it. Or I strongly believe in working on something one day and then coming back to it the following day.
Me too.
I think for me that really works. And When I'm editing, I try and do the same as well. I really like to have a night's sleep between my first round of editing and my second. And if I can't do that, I always take a coffee break or lunch, and then I will print whatever I'm working on. I print it out and then I read it through on paper. And I do that when I write as well. I always print it out at the end and read it on paper because I think that makes such a difference to how it sounds.
Fun fact, one of the first articles I ever published on Medium was exactly about that everything you write, you should sleep on it at least once, because you would not believe the amount of articles I ended up completely trashing or rewriting and not publishing just because the next day you have a completely different mindset. It helps me so much. And it's actually really, really helpful for microcopy and UX writing to sleep on it once, because it will marinate in your brain. I mean, there's research on this. So I think it's really valuable. And unfortunately, I feel like clients do not understand this, though. Everything always has to be done right away and really quickly. So it's something I constantly try to advocate for.
Yeah, I feel the same. And I mean, luckily with one of my clients, they tend to send me stuff during the day or in the afternoon, which means that that time just gets built in. And if they're not very desperate for it back, sometimes they are, but then I do have that time, because I think it's really important to take a step away and have some hours away from it where it's there in the back of your mind, but you're not actively thinking about it. It becomes a passive thing, and you're sitting there and you say marinating it. It's there, but you're not concentrating on it. Because I think when you're sitting and just staring at a screen or a page, that's when the block happens.
Yeah.
And then your brain starts to just work against itself, and then all the negative thoughts come in, and then you just go round and round in that loop. And that is difficult to break out of.
Yeah. Funnily enough, for me, it mostly happens when I got really excited about a topic or a brief, and I just basically get started without structuring my thoughts first. And then it can happen to me that after a while I realize, hey, like, this actually does not make sense, or this is not good. And that will instantly throw me into like a major writer's block, because I've kind of built or written myself into a hole and I don't know how to get out of it. So something that, or maybe a small recommendation to prevent it would be to, no matter how excited you are, at least do some organizing in your head before you get started. I think that really helps.
That's a lesson I need to learn as well. And the worst thing about this is that I don't plan when I'm writing an article. I do just dive in, and I think that's why I tend to get about a third of the way through and just think, oh, this is not working, or this has to change direction completely. And right now, my son is in third grade, and he's starting to have to write two sides of A4 paper a week in Swedish, always on a topic. And he always just sits there with the paper in front of him and says, I can't do it, it's awful, it's terrible. And I say to him every time, right, here's a notebook, right, mind map it, just write down the topic in the middle, loads of arrows coming out, just write down all your thoughts and something will come out of it. And I just don't do that myself. And it's terrible. I'm giving him, you know, this advice and saying, this is how you should do it, this is how you should think about writing. And then when I sit down to write an article, I'm just like, right, I'm just going to throw myself in, and this is what it is,
It's very similar to UX writing as well, in the sense that my worst UX copy is when I kind of get a brief and I feel like I already know exactly what I'm going to write, and I kind of just write it down and I think about it, well, honestly, just very briefly. And then it hits me much later that, hey, wait, I actually need more context in order to produce the right copier. So something that I do is that I force myself to come up with at least a handful of questions that I ask. Usually it's the designer that asks for UX writing, that I ask to get more context before I sit down and start on my explorations. And it's really, really helpful, because even when you may think you already have the answer, this forces you to actually bring in some additional context that, at least when it comes to microcopy, usually impacts what you're going to write. And I think maybe this also works for longer articles, to just think of what are some questions you feel like you need to answer before you can get started.
I can see that exactly. I've got my notebook in front of me, and I've got a page in here where I've written down four questions, because I started to write an article and then I thought, oh, hang on, I don't know these tiny bits of the story or this aspect or what this person was actually doing and this person's relation to that person. And because I had got to that point where I just stalled in the writing of it, and I just thought, I don't know where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
And now that I have these sort of just these first four questions that I can start to think about, I can see a much clearer direction for what I want to say now.
Yeah.
It is very important.
It's really
bad. But I'm also just a great believer. I mean, I know I said I had post-its everywhere. I just have to write things down.
Yeah.
I've tried using apps, and I try and store, if I find an interesting website, I try and put it on Trello, but that's about as far as I get digitally. I am an analog person, and if I haven't written something down in my own handwriting, then it tends to just drop out of my brain, which is why sort of my morning routine is devoted to my bullet journal and getting everything down and making sure everything's there.
Yeah.
And I have pages in that are just random notes and I can go back to. Because for me, writing it down is key.
That's a really good tip. And on that note, what is the main thing you would say to somebody who says, hey, Kat, I want to get into freelance writing? What is the main piece of advice you would give them?
Just start writing.
Yeah.
Before you even set up a freelance business or look into that, just start writing. Get your own blog, or actually I'd say write on Medium. I think Medium is more important now. I actually don't write on my own website that much anymore.
No.
I tend to do one article a month, and that's my roundup of how life as a freelancer has been for me the previous month. And that's almost, I just use that more for my own sort of accountability, really, yeah, than just to have a note. And I think Medium is the place to be.
Yeah.
But because as you said, you can write about whatever you want on there. There is an area for everything.
Yeah. And it's a great way to get initial feedback, because for me, it's also, I always say, hey, you just need to start writing, and ideally you start writing a lot in different formats and you see how it feels. But then I do also think it's really important to try to get feedback early on. So, you know, publish it on Medium, see how people react there, or maybe send it to a friend. I still do that sometimes when I'm insecure about something, I'll send it to a friend, and it's really helpful for me. And then something that a lot of people, I feel, don't like to hear, even if they want to become writers, is that I really do believe in the power of reading. And
oh, yes,
this is definitely something I also always recommend. Just read, and don't just read memes on Instagram, but, you know, read an article and read a book and read fiction. And I think that's really valuable.
And read things that you think you're not going to like.
Yeah, definitely.
It turns out you don't like them. You learn something from it. You learn that you like the way that person wrote, even though you don't like the topic, or you don't like the way that person wrote. And then you can look at what you didn't like about it and what you can learn from that. And I'm also the biggest fan of the library. And I think the library is just an amazing place. I'm absolutely obsessed. It drives my husband mad, because I'll say, I'm just popping to the library to return a book. And he'll say, don't get any more out. No, I'm just taking back two, and I'll come back with seven, because I'll just think, oh, I'll just go and look if they've got this book that I want. And then I'll just browse the shelves and think, oh, then there's that one. And I will just, I come back with bags of books. I think I have 38 books out from the library at the moment. Wow.
But it's so important to develop your voice and to actually, I mean, it's funny to me, you won't believe how many people have reached out to me asking for advice on how to become a writer or a copywriter that at the same time pride themselves with the fact that they haven't read a book since high school. And I'm just like, you know, I'm normally not a very judgmental person. Actually, that's bullshit. I am pretty judgmental, but I do judge them quite heavily. No, they're great people, but still, I'm just sometimes like, maybe you should read a bit.
I can't even imagine that. I mean, I sort of lost my reading mojo after both my boys were born, just because I didn't have the time or the energy. I was tired, and it just feels amazing that in the last 3-4 years I've become a reader again, and I just love that. And I love having a huge range of books to choose from, which is why I love the library so much. And I can't just read just fiction, or I can't read just one type of fiction. I need to change all the time, and I need to have 3 or 4 books on the go so that I can pick and choose. And, you know, one day I feel like reading a short story, the next day I want to read a business book, as I said, I read a lot on Medium, and I it's the newspapers, and there's some amazing websites out there with some, I mean, I love The Cut and places like that, and I think some of the writing on there is brilliant.
I agree.
And I just, you know, then there's some journalists who I will read them, whatever they put out, just all the time.
Oh.
And I think, as you say, reading is so important. It's like reading and just writing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's where you start.
Yeah.
Learn what you like to read, what you don't like to read, what you think is good, what you don't think is that great, and work from there.
Thank you so much for joining today, Kat. I think this was really great. So happy that you shared your thoughts. And I think it would be great to have you as a guest again sometime so we can talk maybe about more specific things to freelance writing, like setting your rates and all of those things we don't want to talk about.
rate setting, I think, is the absolute worst part of freelancing. Yeah. It's the thing I dread the most.
Yeah, which is why we should talk about it.
Exactly. It's the worst thing because, you know, you get so excited a new client approaches you and you think, oh, great, a new client. And then they say, and let's talk about rates. And my heart just sinks.
Yeah.
Gives a break out in the cold sweat.
Yeah. So stay tuned for the next episode.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. It's been really great.
Thank you for joining. Yeah, I think this is going to be great. And I think our listeners are going to learn a lot from this. And if not, at least have a laugh about how awkward we are. Yeah, so that was Content Rookie today. A bit different from the other content I've put out so far, but I really hope you enjoyed the conversation and that you got some value from it and maybe got inspired to read more and write more, which, as we know, and I say this in almost every episode, is something that I strongly, strongly advocate. Yeah, please let me know if you have any feedback, if there are any other topics you think we should cover. And next episode, we're going to be back with more content very specific to content marketing, copywriting, and UX writing. Probably another episode on copywriting, actually, which I'm really excited about, where I want to talk a bit about some tips and tricks and how you can get better at copywriting with some really easy tweaks. Thank you so much for listening today. I'm Nicole. This is Content Rookie. See you soon.